Radio 1270, WXYZ, Detroit.
It's 10 p.m. in Detroit and time for the David Newman Show. The thoughts and opinions expressed in the following hours of comment and conversation do not necessarily represent those of the sponsors, owners, or management of WXYZ Radio. Now, here is David Newman.
Good evening and welcome to another program. A very important date tonight in the history of this radio station, one of the most famous radio stations in the country, a radio station that was known by anybody who had any exposure to this business. When I announced to my former employers in Boston that I was coming to Detroit, they said, oh, WXYZ, Paul Winter, well, you know, the Lone Ranger. And all that, so everybody at that station, who some of them had never been to Detroit as such, knew WXYZ. That's why I say it's got to be one of the most famous radio stations in the country, along with a very few others. Anyway, 50 years ago tonight, a radio station called WCHP.
GHP,
pardon me, went on the air. George Harrison Phelps, not Charles Harrison Phelps. I don't know why the name Charles was in my mind. Anyway, and that is why we're doing the program that we're doing tonight. In commemoration of the 50th birthday of this particular radio station, now WXYZ. We have Dick Osgood and Fred Wolf here in the studio. No further introduction is required for anybody who knows anything about the history of this radio station. Later on, Flower Day, Ernie Winstanley, Mickey Shore, Rube Weiss, and Lee Allen will all be on this program. All of that to come later on. 10:02 is our WXYZ time. We'll get to all of that momentarily. First, Bill Rafferty from the MESC with Jobs.
Our telephone number there is 897-2700. See you Monday night, David.
Thank you, Bill. And Bill's remarks will be rebroadcast on this program around about midnight tonight. Now, welcome to Dick Osgood and Fred Wolf. Glad to have both of you on the program.
As a matter of fact, Fred, it is mighty great to see you. I know we used to kid when I introduced you, and you used to kid me, and everybody said, why do you let Fred Wolf do that to you every morning? And I said, if I can play straight to Fred Wolf, I'm happy.
Well,
remember how you used to put me down?
My friends used to say, why do you pick on that poor guy?
Right. What did you actually do? Part of this is a mini education for me as a newcomer to Detroit.
And raised Boston, you said.
I'm and Boston. Boston. Yeah, well, I didn't know that.
Oh, yes,
no. Well, I only worked in Boston
Bostonian.
For
years. In fact,
and
I was dramatic director on the Yankee Network for several years.
Really?
3-4 years.
Ooh. Well, that's
Yankee Network still exists?
I don't know. I've never heard of it.
WAAB.
WNAC exists as a television station, no longer radio.
Oh.
And that swap may have occurred before I was there. I was only there for a year and a half, and I was with WEEI, which, of course, is one of the pioneer radio stations.
That's the one Paul Winter was with.
Right, exactly. And it began as the Edison Electric station, and then it went to CBS, joined the Columbia Network. In fact, it broadcast, it sort of had a history, sort of like WXYZ.
They all have history.
Yeah, it broadcast the Sacco and Vanzetti coverage.
It was
a pioneer radio station. Yeah. Anyway, that's where I was, and now we're here. Dick Osgood was a veteran Detroit broadcaster and critic on this radio station and historian. Now, correct?
Yeah, but the thing that bothers me is that nobody mentions the most important program I ever did,
which is
they just ignore it terribly. Fred, you know, it was
show?
Before your time. You see,
were
it was
you
before
doing a kid show or something.
Yeah, I did the kid show. But I did, the high-speed Fact Finder, the high-speed March of Victory, the high-speed Eyes on Tomorrow, the high-speed In Bold Relief, and the high-speed Musical Treasures programs for 13 and a half years for one sponsor who paid $80,000 a year for it. I claim a few bricks in this building.
Yeah,
but nobody ever mentions that.
Of course, I can't
mention
it because I don't know it.
I researched them and wrote these six-minute stories, which were featured with Benny Kite and the orchestra, a male quartet, and a male soloist.
High speed.
High speed gas stations.
High speed.
No longer exist.
You know, you never got a free tank of gas in that whole 13 years.
I got a horn that said, high speed is on the air.
Fred Wolf is morning man and sportscaster here. When, Fred? When was the last time you were here, and when did you begin? That's sort of a reverse.
Well, this is very close. I started on October 13th, 1945, which is only a few days from today, as official. I was doing a little bit on Judge Watts in his Sandlotters on Saturdays. I used to bowl quite a bit, and I couldn't bowl anymore.
This is modest. He was on a championship team for Stroh's, wasn't
injured
it?
Back, and I had to quit bowling, and the judge said, why don't you come down on Saturday and talk a little bit about bowling, which I did, and I... He said, gee, you ought to do a bowling show. Well, one thing led to another, and I finally got a bowling show, and I went on the air October 13th. And it'll be, what, 1930 years ago? This Monday or Tuesday, whenever the 13th is.
When did you get your morning show? How did all of that come about?
Well, that came about, of course, from the bowling show. We started doing a lot of golf shows, golf tournaments. We used to host the Motor City Open here, which we covered by radio for the first few years before television, and I was used on those. I was my first show out of a bowling show, or out of the studio, was broadcast the Gold Cup races on the Detroit River.
The motorboat race.
Yes,
yeah.
Powerboat.
Oh, come on now. Fred, tell the story about you and the top of the skyscraper.
Well, the way I got the job, Dave, was that they wanted to put a man up on the 21st floor, on the roof of the Detroit Towers, I think it is, down there on Jefferson Avenue. And there were three or four guys on the staff who said, I'm not going up there. So Mr. Pyle, who was our production manager, said, Wolf will go up there. He's afraid of that. So I went up there, and I did my first show, and it was actually the first time that we had another man across the river at the starting line. And, you know, you have these accidents and postponements and fills, and suddenly all my little notes that I had were gone, and I had to just talk off the cuff, and I was scared to death. That's the first time I ever, you know, had a microphone in my hand.
How did it go? Were you equal to the challenge?
No,
I got away with it. I got away with it.
Now tell what happened. Johnny Slagle, who is one of the men out in the spot, and everybody remembers
Detroit
Johnny Slagle.
Detroit Club Turn, yeah.
He said,
Belisle Bridge.
Don't worry about it, Fred. If you get in trouble, just throw it to me.
Throw it to me.
So, all right. The accident, the thing happened, the boat stalled, the favorite boat stalled down in front of Fred.
The Golden
Gate. And they threw it, and now Fred Wolf, you know, will tell you. And he said, well, it's just stopped down there. Take it away, John. And Slagle took it. Crazy man, you didn't tell me.
Something like that. But I got it back a few more times. You know, you're up on the 21st floor and you're looking down, I don't know how many feet that is, and some little splinter of wood in the water.
You had a pair of binoculars even?
And I am supposed to talk. I had a pair of binoculars, but you still couldn't see much. And to try to describe what was wrong with the boat, the guys driving it didn't know what was wrong with it. How would I know?
They wanted you to guess, though.
Well, you do a little faking, I guess. You've been in radio long enough to know, and Dick knows, sometimes you have to be a little dramatic along the line where the dramatics or the drama is not there. You've got to produce it. That's your job, and if you can do that, you can make out.
Yeah.
And I faked it for 20 years.
Well, how did you get into the morning show, though? Tell me that.
Well, then I started doing this and doing that all radio, and my good friend John Slagle, the late John Slagle, who Dick just mentioned, he was going to take his vacation, and they didn't know who to put on a show, and he had a night show, he went on about,
that was 10 or
10 to 12, then before they signed off.
Record show.
And he told me one day, he says, hey, how'd you like to do my show? And I said, who wants to be a disc jockey? I said, there ain't no way, I'm going to be a big time sports announcer, you know, disc jockey. Well, one thing led to another, and he shamed me into it, so I did a show for 2 weeks. I had a lot of fun. Then our morning man, Ross Mulholland, he used to take weekends off, and he'd say, why don't you do my morning show? So I thought, well, I got away with that one. I'll try his a couple times, which I did. And, of course, his show was all script and very tight production, and he had writers, and it was a real interesting show to do and very educational in the business, so to speak. So I did his show three or four times, and then a year or so went by, and then he took another vacation, and then he finally took a three-week vacation to go out to the West Coast, and I did the show for the next 15 or 18 years.
It just arose that way.
Well,
he got a little problem with the station, and they kept saying, do it another week, do it another week, do it another week.
And his vacation became extended.
They made a settlement of some kind with the problem that he made. I don't know all the details.
From the president of the station, James G. Riddell, was that Mulholland wanted to keep his morning show and hire you to do it, but he wanted to pick the gravy take his Western show, his show out on the West Coast, and keep that too.
That's right. He did offer me a job.
G. Riddell said nothing doing. Fred Wolf will do it.
What kind of a show was it? I know you're an institution
in
Detroit. I never heard it, unfortunately. That's
well, you
that's my situation.
You missed one of the big.
Yeah, I'm sure.
You missed a good morning newscaster too.
Yes. See, Dick was doing the morning news for quite a few years. During my stint as a morning man, and Dick and I used to work together pretty well. As I used to say, call him Little Richard or something like this, pick on him a little bit. Mm-hmm. But just a morning show. We in those days, you could play your own music. I have a little ear for music that I like, and it seems like the people liked it.
What kind of music did you play?
Well, what you'd call
the Beatles, I'll tell you that, for a long time.
For a long time.
Or Presley.
I went on record as never playing a Presley record until he sang a good one, and I think I broke my promise and played it.
Which one was it? Do you remember?
I just forgot. It was kind of a ballad type of thing.
It wasn't Loose Weight Shoes or Hound Dog or any of the ones
Dog. Are you kidding? That was one of the ones that...
The objectionable ones.
No. But we started out the show on an Indian motif. I called myself Swampy Joe, and we had percolator and steam and swamp water type of bit, and the tablecloth bit was a carryover from Ross Mulholland, because he always had a tablecloth thing. As a matter of fact, when I started, the fellow that was writing for him, Tom Ahern, who was our news editor, wrote for Mulholland, and of course he just kept on doing the same job with me. And then I after a few months, I couldn't stand that tight type of show because, I don't know, I wanted to be freer. So we eliminated the tight stuff and just used what we call one-liners as fills. And then, of course, the credit I get of being the, or WXYZ, I'll say, where we took radio out of the studio. I was always a firm believer in that. I just felt... When television was coming in 47, 48, and 49, I used to say, we got to get radio out of the studio. We got to let people see us, or as I used to call it on my show, poor man's television. Come on, drive over and listen, and it's poor, I call it poor man's television.
Remotes.
He started on the front porch because it was hot.
Oh, that's the story, too.
Now, wait a minute. So then it got cold, and he couldn't go in. No, he couldn't stay out. Yeah. So they built the Wigwam.
A
little glass house, which was quite controversial in the neighborhood, but was tremendously successful. So then he said, well, why don't we put it on wheels and go around the town? So he started what other stations...
We had to put it on wheels, Dick. They sold the building.
Right, that's right. And he didn't want to go out to Siberia. They moved us to Siberia, which is Joy and Greenfield. And Fred didn't want to go out there early in the morning, so he put it on wheels and went around on, as you say, remotes then. And then we had three of them at one time, didn't we?
Yes.
This front porch business, that was your own home?
No, this is
down in Iroquois and Jefferson. We used to call it the Taj Mahal Studios, and it was right on Jefferson Avenue.
This is the famous East Jefferson Studios where the whole
Lone Ranger
happened for so many years.
That's right.
After its
And a lot of Detroiters don't know it, might be interested. That's now a supermarket, but the Mendelssohn Mansion, which Mr. Trendle purchased for WXYZ, was the first mansion built in Indian Village.
It was beautiful.
Very
inside.
First mansion. It was just magnificent.
Gentlemen, we have to pause for just a little bit. Number to call us here, 353-3030. We have a couple of lines open, and we invite people with or without expertise, questions that can jog our memory. I proceed at a handicap, as you know, but my education is beginning. It's begun a little bit before with a couple of shows that we've done sort of tangentially. Tonight, we're all about the 50th anniversary of this radio station. Dick Osgood is here, and Fred Wolf. We pause for this.
Anniversary of this radio station.
Dick Osgood is here, and Fred Wolf. We pause for this.
Radio. It's been doing nice things for you for years. It wakes you up. It keeps you company in your car. It fills your life with music. It fills your mind with ideas. It informs, entertains, and radio does something else. It sells. Quickly, easily, creatively, efficiently. Consider that last word, efficiently. As a businessman, you know how all costs, including advertising, have been skyrocketing. You know what adflation means. A major advertising agency has just reported that line rates for the largest metropolitan dailies in the top 50 markets rose 12% over the past year. But what about radio? The same study revealed the cost for buying radio in the top 50 markets increased only 3%. What else can you buy today that only costs 3% more than it did a year ago? Get radio selling for you.
Call Jay Hoker, General Sales Manager, at 444-1111. He'll suggest ways radio can help you fight adflation.
Furnished by Radio Advertising Bureau.
10:16 on the Friday night edition of the David Newman Show. I want to find out some of the early history of this radio station momentarily. The weather mostly cloudy tonight, low 42, sunny Saturday, the high about 60. Clear Saturday night, the low about 40, and currently we have a fairly mild 60 degrees. You know, O'Brien's Man's World is having a spectacular suit sale this weekend only at all three O'Brien's locations. They have suits by Tony Perini in polyesters, wools, and blends. Selections for all occasions, all tastes. Now, the suits regularly priced at $195 are on sale for only $149.88. Three-piece vested suits, regularly $185, marked down to $129.88. Don't miss this super sale. It's this weekend only at O'Brien's Man's World. There's one at Grantland Shopping Center, Finkel and Grand River, Livonia, 7 Mile and Farmington, and the all-new Northland store. 10:17 is our WXYZ time, and let's get some first principles, gentlemen. When this radio station first appeared, in what incarnation, where was it, what its call letters were, what the power was, all the basic facts about WGHP.
That's Osgood's department.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, there was a fabulous gentleman named George Harrison Phelps. If anybody, he was born in Millers Falls, Massachusetts, the son of a grain dealer. He went to Cornell University, and when he came out, he reputedly opened the first service garage for automobiles in Worcester, Mass.
They still live near Worcester.
Right. He then went down to Boston as assistant manager of the Buick Company in Boston when he was only 23. Then there was an automobile company called Everett, Metzger, and Flanders, and he became manager of that. It was taken over by Studebaker. Studebaker moved him to New York, where he was a manager, and then he was the Dodge people out here. The Dodge brothers heard of him, and they wanted to set up a sales department and advertising department, and this fellow was really going well in New York, so that they brought him out here, and he opened his own agency finally. Oh, the important thing is, and a lot of people my age, which is 95 or 95 and 5 months, I believe it is now, remember that the only ad the Dodge car had to have at this particular in the 20s was the word dependable, mm-hmm. white letters on a blue background on the billboard, dependable. They didn't even put the name of the company up. Well, he was the man who dreamed that up. So they were so successful that he left that company and opened his own advertising agency and took the Dodge account with him. Okay? It put another advertising man out of work. So he was always ahead of his time and always into the, like in the automobile from the grain business, you know. He decided that he'd get into this radio thing. So he opened it 50 years ago tonight, and at that time there were only six stations in this city. WWJ was here, owned by the Detroit News. WCS, owned by the Free Press, was here. WJR was then owned by Jewett Radio and Phonograph Company. And there was a WWI, which is owned by the Ford Motor Company, News privately. And there was a police station, and one of the first in the country, police radio, KOP, which was, I don't know whether that still exists or not. That was the initials of it. And the Detroit Yacht Club had a station, WDYC, which was used to communicate with its members who were out on the lakes in their boats. It was a private sort of thing. I thought that was interesting.
All of those signals, those private signals, were receivable on home receivers? They were broadcast on the general...
Yes, they were at that time, yes. And
on the general
interestingly
bands.
Enough, there were only two, all the stations were on only two wavelengths at that time, all across the country. And it was given out by the Chamber of
Department of Commerce, right.
And Herbert Hoover was the head of that. And they all had one or the other of these two
frequencies,
yeah.
What were they?
Oh, I have them here somewhere.
In any event, I can't think. They're long gone.
Dick, yeah, sure I told you that little story about the gentleman I met tonight. Dave, I'll try to be brief. I just left my office.
Yeah.
Come over here. I have a bowling center where there's a lot of people, and a gentleman walked in who I was supposed to see about a meeting next week for the Old Timers Bowling Association. And we set it all up. We're having a meeting next Friday, and I'm looking at my watch, and I said, geez, I have to go. I got a long drive. I got to go out to WXYZ for their 50th anniversary party, because today's their 50th anniversary. He said, I certainly know it's their 50th wedding anniversary. I know it's their 50th wedding anniversary. Their 50th anniversary, Fred. Why don't I get wedding in there? He said,
how is Emily, by
the way? They don't even know that I am probably the only living man, at least in the area, who appeared on the first show 50 years ago tonight. And his name is Norm White. And I almost brought him along, Dave. But I didn't want to. I know you fellas have programming.
You know, if he had
50 years ago tonight, and I'm standing there talking to him, I know my way out here. So I'm gonna have to let Chuck Fritz know that he's got a guy that was here 50 years ago. He better get a hold of him.
Is there any chance that Norm might be listening? Because I'd like to know which of these two aggregations he's saying. And what
I hope
you
he
said
calls
the Apple Club. Huh?
We have a couple of lines open for Norm to call us. I'm sure he's listening. And
Norm, give us a buzz.
353-3030. We have a couple of lines open. We're about to talk to Fred Flaherty. First, we have to pause for a public service announcement.
Did you know that burns are the nation's third leading cause of accidental death? Carelessly caused, preventable fires happen every day. Learn and practice fire and burn prevention. WXYZ, safety conscious.
Okay, we're back. 10:22 is our WXYZ time, and we'll talk now to Fred Flaherty. Fred?
Say, Dick.
Yes, Fred.
If you would ever get through with that book you're writing...
He has to put his earphones on. That's the problem.
I heard you. I'm great. I can hear without earphones.
He heard without earphones. He was coming through the...
95, that's not bad.
No, that's 95 in 5 months. the book is finished, Fred, and I've had some bad luck with it. University Press was going to do it, and you've been reading, I believe, this week or last week, you've been hearing on radio and television about their financial difficulties, and the publishing company feels that it cannot afford to publish this book, which is sizable and requires photographs, but they like it, and they've taken it to another publisher. So now I'm just waiting to see what happens.
Got to do it, Dick. That's the story of WXYZ, and it's 50 years.
You betcha. And you and I are going to do an album for Greenfield Village and the Henry Ford Museum.
That's right.
The sounds of the village and the museum.
Yeah.
Fred, I'm a newcomer, comparatively. I've only been here about 9 months, and obviously your time here predates mine, and forgive my ignorance, but, you know, casting all modesty to the winds, tell me exactly what you did here.
Well, Dave, I got there in 1934, yeah. And I think I was the last employee that George Trendle had. Even when the show went off the air and we were doing some repeats on NBC for 5 a week, I was taking old tapes and preparing shows and putting in new commercials, and that's when it went off. But, you know, the amazing thing about the Lone Ranger program that a lot of people don't know or realize, that we did 2,596 complete half-hour programs.
That was on a three-night-a-week basis?
Three-night-a-week basis, and not one of those shows was a taped... Every one of those shows was a live broadcast, and each one of those shows was done three times.
Oh, that's right.
In this market, it was live. Later on, they were transcribed for other markets, though. Is that not correct?
Not until after 1955, after the 2,596 shows had expired. We had never repeated a show. We never taped a show. We did three shows every night, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday.
Let me explain that, Fred,
yeah.
If I may. You went on here at 7:30. You went on the middle of Chicago at 8:30, and you went on the West Coast at 10:30.
That's right. We did three feeds.
See, they were live, all those three shows. They were done...
Over and over again for the different time zones.
Because they didn't record for a long time.
Because I listened as a kid in New York at 7:30. Yeah, that's right. 8 o'clock was Baby Snooks. I couldn't stay up that late in my early... Baby Snooks followed the Lone Ranger.
Right. Do you know that the Mutual Network was formed because by H. Allen Campbell of this station, he sparked...
Yeah, so I read in this book, the authorized biography of George W. Trendle,
which is full of error.
So you say.
If you want a controversy on your program, I'll argue with a book.
Well, there are some errors that even I was able to discern. For example, when she's talking about the 30s, she refers to Herbert Hoover as the then Secretary of Commerce. Well, of course, in the 30s, he was either president or a man out of office. 1026 is our WXYZ time. We have a bunch of calls. Can you stay with us a while longer, Fred?
Yes.
Okay, I'll put you on hold, or I'll just leave you where you are is what I should do. We'll pause for this.
Wouldn't you love to own a new home? Something fresh and something new. Wouldn't you love to buy a new home and save a lot of money, too? Amazon has built your new home.
Save big at Century Farm. No one's beating our deals on Canton's most exciting ranch, tri-level, and colonial homes. Prices begin at only $32,990. Low 7.5% mortgages, zero down for vets, and up to a $2,000 tax credit. Century Farms in Canton on Haggerty Road, south of Cherry Hill.
1027 on the David Newman Show. We're talking about the 50th anniversary. Well, it is the 50th anniversary. We're talking about this radio station tonight, WXYZ, now 50 years old.
50th wedding anniversary.
50th wedding anniversary.
Back in there.
It was wedded to
George Harrison
Phelps, and then later on there were other marriages, and we'll talk about that as the show goes on. Right now, though, we're about to approach news time, so it would not be fair to a caller to put a caller on now. We have
Flower Day.
Well, it's not easy to say, for heaven's sake. Fred Flower Day. It's a little bit of...
Whose father was in the flower business, and grandfather. They were florists.
I didn't know that.
Yes, sir.
My grandfather was a florist, and his father before him, and my father, and I was in the flower business before I joined WXYZ.
I think you changed your name, Fred.
No.
It's coincidental, then, you're saying.
Right.
That's Wolf there, isn't it?
Yeah.
We have to pause, gentlemen, for the news. Sue Carter standing by with the news on WXYZ Detroit.
Ford dines with Michigan Republicans. Kelly request approved. Wayne State chops budget. Sue Carter reporting WXYZ News. President Ford is rounding out his visit to Michigan. Mike O'Neill reports.
Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States and Mrs. Ford.
Although a small group of demonstrators had booed the president as he passed them in his limousine, here inside Cobo Hall, the favorite son of Mrs. Ford were roundly applauded. They made their entrance before some 3,000 persons who paid $50 a plate for the GOP fundraiser. In his speech, the president urged backing of his tax cut plan, which is tied to a spending limitation. The president also congratulated automakers for going more than halfway, as he put it, toward achieving a 40% fuel economy improvement by 1980. But he said nothing about pending legislation which would mandate fuel economy. Michael Neal, WXYZ News, Cobo Hall.
Two threats have been lodged against Mr. Ford. Police in Taylor this morning picked up 22-year-old Danny Sadowski after he phoned in a threat. And authorities have just arrested 26-year-old Leon Lemons of Detroit, who allegedly declared he was going to kill the president. Attorney General Frank Kelly has asked the federal court to assume jurisdiction over two suits pending against the Michigan State Police Academy, one charging not enough minorities are being hired, the other alleging reverse discrimination. The U.S. District Court in Grand Rapids has agreed to hear both cases, eliminating what Kelly termed a conflict. Wayne State University Board of Governors has chopped that school's budget by $2 million, but WSU President George Gullin says they may not be out of the woods yet.
We're not through with this problem yet. The governor has made it very clear to the press that he expects to cut some more money out of schools and colleges at the end of October once the legislature is back. I do not know how we'll accommodate to another cut, because we've cut very deeply.
Governor Milliken has promised to cut university budgets by another 1%. State Senator David Holmes wants a special committee set up to investigate Edison's terminating power at the Heritage Hotel. Now, world news from ABC.
Here's the latest worldwide news.
Tom, the American Entertainment Network, Wally Parker reporting. Nearly 4,000 Republicans showed up at Cobo Hall in Detroit tonight for a fundraising dinner and heard President Ford put in another plug for his package of a $28 billion tax cut, coupled with congressional cooperation to cut federal spending. The president talked about national opinion polls published in Detroit concerning his package.
When the question was asked, 70% of the answers said that's a good program and 30% disagreed. I think the public understands that this is sound, it's right, and the Congress better do something about it.
The president said again his program will not work unless the tax cut and cuts in federal spending are tied together. Now this.
Has this ever happened to you?
This way, please.
You're invited to the boss's house, and a maid ushers you into the living room, and she says,
Mr. Phillips will be down in just a minute.
Well, you're a little nervous, so you light up your cigarette, you take a puff, and now you look for an ashtray for the match. No ashtray. So, into your pocket, right? Okay, now you have an ash on your cigarette. What do you do? You tap it off into your other hand, and you have this awful helpless feeling. And now, into your pocket. And you think, I gotta get rid of this butt. So you grind it out on the sole of your shoe, and you're standing there like a nut, perspiring with this thing in your hand. So you think you'll have to get the suit cleaned anyway.
Are there any other reasons not to smoke cigarettes? Ask your American Cancer Society.
President Ford today lifted the embargo on the sale of grain to Poland, but not the Soviets, following a report from the Agriculture Department that U.S. crops of corn and wheat this fall will set records. There's this reaction to the crop report and the president's action in Denver from Myron Schubert of the Rocky Mountain Farmers Union.
The crop report today indicates what it has all the way along, that we've got much larger quantities of these grains in the country, much larger than we can consume in this country. So we should be negotiating and trading now with anybody else in the world who is able to buy our grains. And farmers have every right to be incensed that the market in the Soviet Union has not been reopened.
Myron Schubert of the Rocky Mountain Farmers Union said the only justification for not selling grain to the Soviets for a short time is the possibility of a breakthrough on a long-term sales agreement. Israel today started implementing the new Sinai Agreement with Egypt, first signing the final documents of the settlement, then turning over some oil fields captured from Egypt in the 1967 war. The oil fields at Ras Sudar were handed over to three American oil company executives acting as representatives of Egypt. The Israeli actions followed congressional approval yesterday to allow the stationing of American civilian technicians in the Sinai to monitor the agreement. More on that from ABC diplomatic correspondent Ted Koppel at the State Department.
It'll be another 4 to 5 months before those American technicians will be needed in the Middle East, and no final decision has been reached yet on the makeup of the team. The administration is leaning away from its initial plan, however, to send retired CIA and other intelligence agency personnel. That was being considered before the technicians, and of course the CIA itself, started getting so much adverse publicity. Now the plan is to send mostly electronics experts from private industry, with some political officers from the State Department on hand to make quick decisions if the situation in the Sinai should unexpectedly heat up. This is Ted Koppel, ABC News at the State Department.
Florida's tough new drug pusher law has resulted in a death sentence. Glenn Martin, convicted of selling heroin which killed the user, was today sentenced to die in the electric chair. Martin of Daytona Beach was found guilty in the overdose death of Terry Mitten in August of last year. A dozen Latin refugees and five of their relatives were flown out of Buenos Aires tonight, headed for Algeria. The refugees released five hostages held since Wednesday. This is ABC News. One report from Oporto in northern Portugal says at least 41 people were wounded tonight when thousands of rival leftists fought each other with rocks, then guns and grenades. Officials in Tripoli, Lebanon report a ceasefire between Muslims and Christians there seems to be holding, but the street fighting continued tonight in Beirut despite the presence of Palestinian leader Yasser Arafat to try to oversee a truce. Police in Lebanon report 25 people killed in today's street fighting, with another 50 wounded. That's the news. I'm Wally Parker for the American Entertainment Radio Network. A service of ABC News.
Detroit's weather forecast, mostly clear tonight, low 43. Sunny tomorrow, high 62. WXYZ temperature, 60 degrees. Sue Carter, WXYZ News. Now, back to the David Newman Show.
In our show about the 50th anniversary of this radio station, WXYZ, Dick Osgood and Fred Wolf here in the studio, and Fred Flowerday on the phone. And without further ado, we'll take a call for them from Doris. Later on, we'll find out a little bit more about the history of the station. Right now, Doris? Doris?
Good evening. How are you, Doris? How are you, Fred and Dick?
Hi.
How are you?
Good to hear you again. Whatever happened to Andy D?
Andy D went to the West Coast with Phil Brestoff, her husband, and they didn't have too great luck out there, although Phil Brestoff was a station manager at one point. He died of a heart attack, and Auntie Dee went to San Francisco and married again, and she lives in San Francisco now, and they have two grown sons by Phil.
Well, I just wanted to share a couple of... thank you for that information. I've wanted that for a long time.
She was a honey.
Huh?
She was a honey.
Of Nora Broadcasting.
Yes.
Still a major factor of the time.
And Trendle and John Kunsky, actually had been his boss in the theaters. And they had owned and operated many theaters in the Detroit area.
Trendle was something of a theater mogul by then.
He had started as a lawyer, but he'd gone into the showbiz side. And he and Mr. Kunsky, or really Trendle maneuvered it, sold their theaters for a lot of money. And just at a time when everybody was hard up, they were in the market for a radio station. So they heard that this one might be available. And I'm trying to think. Stora had just purchased the station a few months before for $40,000, and he sold it to Kunsky and Trendle for, I believe it was around $250. $250,000. Then, of course, he wanted to change the call letters, and I have a little excerpt from an interview, one of the tapes I cut with him, if you want to play it, as to how he obtained the... He wanted a slogan, the last word in radio.
Yes, right.
And so this is the story of... If you want to play it now?
Yes.
Good deal.
This is your interview.
This is there's a little story behind this. It was not intended for the book originally. In 1968, I knew Mr. Trendle was getting old. Fran Stryker had been killed. Nobody at the station ever heard of Fran Stryker, and I thought, my golly, here's a man, George Trendle, who owned this station so many years, there should be some record. So I, on my own, on vacation in July in 1968, I believe it was, went down to see him. And then, this was part of that original tape.
And this is apropos of your question to him, how he got permission from the U.S. military.
Well,
which
he'll
then
tell
had,
that story.
Okay, he'll tell all of that. Okay, here it comes.
I thought the thing would sound better if it were WXYZ. So I went to Washington. I found out from the Navy that the call letters were held by the Army and the Navy, and we couldn't get them. So I went to the Navy, and I had a long talk with the man in charge, and he said, well, Trendle, if you can get the Army to do this job for you, he says, we'll okay it. But he said, you never can get them to do it. So I went over to the Army, and I talked to the fellow over there, and he said to me, well, if you can get the Navy to do this thing, we'll be willing, but I'm sure they won't. Well, I said, well, you put it in writing that if the Navy is agreeable, you're agreeable. So the guy wrote me a letter. I took it over to the Navy, and I said, here we are, my friend. And he looked rather dumbfounded, but he okayed it. So his call letters were changed to WXYZ.
The last word
last
in radio.
Word in radio.
And that's the
that's
late
right.
George W. Trendle. How long ago did he die?
He died, I think, 2 or 3 years ago. I went to his funeral.
2 years.
2 years,
2 years ago,
Fred Flowerday.
Right.
Okay.
That's right, Fred. Incidentally, I taped with you, sir, and I taped with Fred Wolf. Yeah.
Right.
You're all characters in the book, on the unpublished book.
We're characters, all right.
10:43 on the David Newman Show on WXYZ. That's what the show's all about tonight, WXYZ. And if you're just joining the show, we have Dick Osgood and Fred Wolf and Fred Flowerday, who's on the phone. We're about to take another call, but first I better do a weather. Mostly cloudy overnight, low about 42. Sunny Saturday, the high about 60. Clear Saturday night, low about 40. And currently, we have 60 degrees.
WXYZ presents the Vacation Kingdom of the World.
Walt Disney World in sunny Florida. As a bonus in the WXYZ payroll game, we'll be awarding vacations for four to Walt Disney World to 15 winners to be drawn from payroll game entries you send in. 60 vacations. Perhaps your vacation will be the contemporary dream, where you'll stay at Walt Disney World's Contemporary Resort Hotel, the hotel of tomorrow, today. Enjoy its super dining and nightlife. Shop at the many fine stores, swim in the pools, lay on the beaches. Ride the Disney monorail right through the hotel. Our giveaway bonus flies you round trip on our WXYZ Walt Disney World jets from Eastern, the official airline of Walt Disney World, to Florida on December 11th and 12th. To get airport shuttle, plush rooms for your 5-day, 4-night stay, meals, Magic Kingdom passes, recreation passes, and more. Enjoy the lakes, water sports, camping, golfing, and of course, the Magic Kingdom theme park featuring Disney's spectacular bicentennial attraction, America on Parade. Send your entry to Mickey, WXYZ Payroll Game, Southfield, 48075. Soon, we'll be drawing for your winter sunshine bonus. WXYZ.
10:45 on the David Newman Show. We take another call for the assembled guests from this person right here. Hello.
Hello.
Yes, sir. You're on the David Newman Show on WXYZ.
Hi, Ernie Winstanley.
Hi, Ernie. How are you?
How are you?
How are you, Ernie?
Good.
Hello, Ernie, baby.
God.
The original Dave Reed, Ernie?
The famous Dick Osgood.
Were you the famous first David Reed?
Dan Reed.
Dan Reed. I'm sorry. Excuse me, fellas.
Yeah, right.
The boy in the Lone
You
Ranger.
Were the Lone Ranger's nephew that I used to listen to on the radio?
Yes. That was in 1933.
Well, how long were you that part? How long were you Dan Reed, in other words?
Until I, until my voice changed.
That's right. It was a young part.
I think Dick could remember those days. He's that old, you know.
Yes, I can remember.
I played the part of Dan Reed until my voice changed when I was 16 years old.
Ernie, can I tell something about your boyhood?
Oh, you certainly can, Dick.
Very briefly. I taped with Ernie, too. In fact, I knew him when he was a kid. He lived alone, believe it. When he was going to high school, he lived alone in an apartment and worked as a sound boy on this station.
Right.
And this James Jewell, who was at that time directing the Lone Ranger,
right,
was like a father to Ernie.
Right.
Ernie, I'm telling your story, but you might not want to tell it, or you might,
mm-hmm,
not remember it as well as I do.
All right.
And most everybody, and Malcolm McCoy, one of the actors, told me out on the West Coast that everybody was very fond of Ernie and sort of took care of him so that he didn't feel lonesome.
Well,
great story.
That's wonderful of you to say. It really is. That really is. It goes back a long, long way. It really does. John, I would like to say that, I wish a great anniversary to WXYZ.
Right.
Which I do, naturally, because it's becoming. Anything that you want to know about the show and the rest of the WXYZ organization, I would naturally like to talk to you about.
Fine, okay. Well, for example, one of the questions that's been in my mind as a longtime fan of the Lone Ranger was the use of that other theme. Everybody knows William Tell Overture was the intro theme, but Les Prelude by Liszt was also used, wasn't it?
I believe so.
I'm sure it was. That was the sort of musical bed for a lot of the action.
Right.
You said there's our middle break
right
theme at the end of the first half of the show.
Right.
Yeah, Fred. Yeah, you confirm that, too.
Fred used to...
I dropped the needle down 2,520 times.
Fred knows.
Right.
In fact, when I was a kid, I used to think it was the same piece of music. In fact, in a music class, when I was, I guess I was in elementary school, I identified Liszt's Les Preludes as the William Tell Overture.
I defended it
staunchly because I had heard it on the Lone Ranger, and everybody knew the Lone Ranger's music was the William Tell Overture.
You know that they
shooting
almost...
Shooting the apple off the kid's head and all
They almost picked the charge of the Light Brigade for the theme of the Lone Ranger. It was between the William Tell, the storm movement in the William Tell Overture and the Light Brigade. And,
I don't even know how the Light Brigade goes.
I don't remember either.
I know the poem,
Charge
the Valley of the Death rode the 600, but I don't know the...
Why don't you whistle it? Then?
I don't know it. I never did know it. I guess everybody knows the William Tell Overture.
Inconceivable, but every day, even though I'm in a recording studio now, having been away from the Laurentian program for many years, I still get letters 2 to 3 times a week of people who are immensely interested in the music used on the Lone Ranger program, asking me to identify 15-second clips they heard on a specific program.
Yeah.
And I just can't do it. I have a complete list of music which used, but I can't identify those things. But the interest in the music played on these programs was very great.
Were there other pieces of music beside Liszt and the William Tell Overture?
Yes, many overtures.
Fred, you used to go down to the Grinnell store and listen to music by the hour, didn't you?
Sit down there in little booths and listen to symphonies, and that's how I got my musical education, which I don't brag about, but at least I developed a liking for classical music, but just by virtue of trying to select interludes for the Green Hornet and Lone Ranger programs. Ernie, tell him about the goat.
I can't hear you very well.
Okay.
He's asking you to tell us about the goat, Ernie. That's Fred Flaherty's voice.
Is that Fred's voice?
That's Fred. Yeah, he's on the phone with us also.
Where is he? At Harrison Valley?
Yeah, I'm up here in the Harrison.
Hi, Fred.
Hi.
How are you?
Fine.
How are you?
The goat.
Well, I can't tell you about that part of the music, but...
No, not the music, Ernie, but you...
Are you talking about the personal appearance at the Fisher Theater?
Oh, yes.
I can tell you about that. You weren't with Ernie. Were you in it?
Oh, yes.
All right.
Yeah.
Oh, he'd rather not talk about that.
Apparently, yes. Gentlemen, we have to pause. Ernie, I thank you for being on with us.
Hey, thank you very much.
Marvelous to have you on the show.
Yeah, well, thank you very much.
10:50 is our WXYZ time. Fred Flaherty is still with us, and we'll be right back right after this.
Did you know that burns are the nation's third leading cause of accidental death? Carelessly caused, preventable fires happen every day. Learn and practice fire and burn prevention. WXYZ, safety conscious.
We're back, 9 minutes to 11 on the David Newman Show. Dick Osgood, Fred Wolfe, and Fred Flaherty on the phone, all apropos of the 50th birthday of this particular radio station. We take a call from the assembled experts here from Bill. Bill?
Yes, hello.
Hi, Bill. How you doing?
Hi. I'd like to find out from Dick Osgood, if I could, who the first Lone Ranger was.
Well, you've stepped right into a controversy, but I have... there were several... Lone Rangers, to tell you the truth, and the very first one, that book is wrong.
I'm looking at the book.
First Lone Ranger, and
Dick is telling me not to.
I have proof of it, was a man named George Stennius, who became George Seton, who produced Airport, won the Oscar for that. He won an Oscar, I think, for Miracle on 34th Street. He's a very top motion picture producer, writer, and director. He was the first, according to himself, and according to James Jewell, who directed the first show, and according to Ray Schaub, who was the engineer on the first show. Some people say a fellow named Jack Deeds was the first, but according to all the records that I can find, Jack Deeds was actually the third. James Jewell, who directed the show, persuaded George Seton that he was a good writer and that he should make that his career, and he thereby lost the Lone Ranger. So he had to get another Lone Ranger. And he said, I have a fellow at Wayne University who has a beautiful voice, but he hasn't done any acting, which was not true. He had done some acting. But he says, I can get him groomed if I can just keep this other fellow going for a bit. And he got a fellow named... Now, it could either have been Jack Deeds or a man named Lee Trent. And through correspondence with Lee Trent, I believe that Lee Trent, who admitted he was one of the early voices on the Lone Ranger under another name, but he would never confirm that he was Jack Deeds. I'm sure he was the same man. He came in second, and James Jewell was a taskmaster. And as Ted Robertson remembered and told me, one of the sound men on the show, Jack Deeds took to alcohol to fortify himself to Mr. Jewel's perfectionism and became too loaded one day, and Jewel fired him, and Jewel played it one night, and then the fourth Lone Ranger went on the next night, and that was Earl Grosser, who played it until he was killed in an automobile accident, and Brace Beamer eventually, within about three shows, took over.
So that was about 1939, then, that that Beamer took over and kept it for whatever.
It was
15 years on the radio.
I don't know. You're still referring to that book.
Yeah, no, I'm not.
Aren't you?
No.
Might have been 39. I remember Earl was killed in the...
Well, she says, if you want me to refer to the book, Mary Bickle's Authorized Biography, which is the only piece of background copy that I had, she says that Grazer had it for 6 years. And since it began in 1933, my arithmetic takes it up to 1939. Is that incorrect? She also says that Deeds... She says Deeds played six performances, then the title was turned over to George Stennius, who played it for a while.
No.
Trennell continued to test voices. She says nothing about the role of Jewel.
Entirely wrong.
She says that Trendle knew what he wanted, and he intended to test till he found the voice that was deep, vibrant, commanding, with authority. A voice that carried the connotation that all the Lone Rangers stood for, so forth.
Earl died on April the 8th, 1940, which was my birthday. I was with Earl that night just before he left to go out home.
And did Jack Deeds go into it then?
No. After Earl, Grace Beamer went into it.
Yeah, no, she says that Deeds was the first, if I read her correctly.
He was.
Deeds played six performances, then Stennius, then Grazer, then others, then Grazer.
No.
Okay, she's
Deeds
wrong.
Came later. But his real name is Lee Trent, and he's now head of a big vitamin company, and he lives in Canada.
We can offer Mrs. Bickle or Ms. Bickle or Miss Bickle equal time if she's listening. I understand, though, she lives in Lighthouse Point, Florida. The Bickle referred to there is Mary Bickle, and she is the authoress of the authorized biography of George W. Trendle, which is kind of worshipful. Dick sort of has a problem with that. Dick Osgood.
Well, I just, I believe that there are a lot of errors in it, and I don't blame Mrs. Bickle for it, because I think she got her material from George W. Trendle, it being authorized, and Mr. Trendle at that time was well in his 80s, and as I said, some of his memory was kind of misty.
Right.
And he also was determined that certain facts would be the way he wanted them to be, rather than as they actually turned out to have been.
5 minutes to 11 on the David Newman Show. Anything further from you, sir?
No. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you for the call. We have another one to take. We have a line open. 353-3030 is our number. And here is Mary. I think this is the Mary I'm thinking it is. Mary?
Oh, hi.
Hi, Mary. How are you?
Mr. Osgood.
Mm-hmm.
You won't remember me, I think, because, I wasn't well-known, and I didn't, maybe a little bit at the time, but I didn't remain well-known. I used to work around Detroit in the early 30s, a matter of fact, all the way through the 30s, in the radio stations. I was on some of the Mummers programs with...
the Mummers, right.
Yeah, Hermit's Cave.
Yes, the Hermit's Cave.
Mr. Penman was the director, and Donelda Curry, his wife.
Right.
Remember her?
Right.
I know.
And Clark Ryder was the Hermit.